Welcome to another edition of Your Spiritual Practice Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And I'm your other co-host, Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And before I mention the title of this particular podcast, I just want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to say, okay?
Seriously, are you ready? Listen carefully. We want you to hear it correctly.
Okay, here we go. Don't suffer from a pain in the ask. I said ask, A-S-K, just so we're clear.
Don't suffer from a pain in the ask, and we think you're going to love today's podcast. We're going to have some fun with it. We're going to start with a cool story.
And it is a cool story. I don't know how true it is. It's probably apocryphal, but it really is a cool story. Okay, here it goes. Two lawyers were on their way back to their car from a luncheon meeting when they were stopped by an armed robber. "Your money and your watches or your lives," he sneered, pointing his handgun at both of them. "May I have a moment, please?" asked one of the victims as she took off her watch and reached into her purse. "I owe my friend here $300, and I want to pay him back right now." The puzzled robber gave his consent, but steadied his gaze and gun on both of them. "Here's the money I owe you," she said to her partner. "We're all square now, right?" Her timing was impeccable, of course. Her creativity and quick thinking helped her pay off a creditor, all because she didn't suffer from a pain in the ask. Now, although this story is amusing, it makes a very important point. Most people ask for too little instead of too much when you think about it. However, the kind of asking we're referring to isn't a verb, but it's actually an acronym, and we'll explain what the acronym means in a few moments after we share what asking isn't, in our opinion.
Right, and we kind of go back to a biblical scripture here in Matthew 21:22, because a lot of people use this to underwrite their affirmations. And Matthew 21:22, the Christ is Jesus says, "Whatever we ask for in prayer, believing with faith, we shall receive." And some other translations say, "Whatever we ask, we shall receive." It doesn't have the "in prayer" in it, depending on the translation. By the way, ask is a mistranslation, isn't it? I believe you know from the original Aramaic.
Yes, absolutely. And this is important that you know this. In the original Aramaic, the word means declare or affirm. It doesn't mean petitioning at all. Unfortunately, many people are taught that it meant ask and not declare or affirm. Interpreted right, it is one of the most powerful teachings that we can suggest to you.
And one of the things we like about this verse is whatever we declare in prayer, the key word here is believing. So we've amped up our spiritual perspective a little bit on this.
As Unity ministers who have amped up our spiritual perspective, we take another position. We don't believe that we're separate from what we believe to be the omnipresent universal consciousness that most people call God. We believe that we are, and you are, a human expression of the omnipresent universal consciousness in human form, expressing as us.
So we declare the good that we know is there already at the level of spirit. So we're not begging for it. It already exists. We're declaring or claiming it. And that leads us to the acronym we referred to earlier. The word ask. If you think about it from the way we've just defined it, it has three parts, A-S-K. The A is affirm it. The S is see it. And the K is know it. So affirm it, see it, and know it. So we're going to talk about what that really means and how we can make that happen.
Yeah. And so we simply affirm our good. We take the position that asking an anthropomorphic, white-bearded God in the sky for something reinforces the falsehood that we, you, everyone, is separate from our divine essence. And for us, that is not the truth of the way things are. In the world of martial arts, for example, asking is more acronym than verb too. In Cher's past life, a past life in this life, when she was in her 30s, she was a student of karate.
Wait. That's being very kind and generous to call me a student of karate. Bill and our son were more the students, and I kind of got dragged into this.
Well, now, Sherry's being just a little bit not modest, but it was a fine mess I'd gotten our family into. A fun mess, but a fine mess. Whenever students were ready to be tested for their next higher belt, they asked for it, sort of, kind of. Not the verb ask, but the acronym ASK. And here's how it worked. When the students thought they were ready to test for their next higher belt, the sensei scheduled a test. All of the students who had earned higher belts, as well as those who possessed the belt that the particular student was testing for, stood in a line in order of their respective belts. The student would walk along the line from the lower belts to the higher belts and stop in front of the person he or she chose to test for his or her karate skills. They, quote-unquote, ask, that is, they declared their readiness to be tested in combat. No words were spoken. The idea was to let their actions prove their readiness.
And it was powerful. It was a very powerful experience. It was a lot more fun to watch than it was to participate in, let me tell you. Well, in the real world, our actions prove our readiness too. Think about it. We ask, that is, we declare. We affirm by right of consciousness that we already have what we want at the human level of our being. What we need to do is affirm our readiness. And this is a key piece that we really want to emphasize. We must affirm our readiness to manifest what we want. That's believing. Believing means we are actually ready for it. And what we want to manifest will come through us, not to us.
Exactly. And we like to share a true story which demonstrates the power of not suffering from what?
A pain in the ass.
And I'll let Cher start the story.
Okay, the story starts with a man named Len Lassord. And this gentleman, Len Lassord, began working for a particular magazine just before Thanksgiving Day. This story goes way back to 1946. He eventually became the magazine's editor-in-chief for over 25 years. Well, 2 months after he started to work there, a fire from a defective chimney burned the business down. Everything, including all the subscriber files, were destroyed. And remember, this was back when they didn't have the cloud where everything was saved. I mean, when it was gone, it was gone. One of the board members of the magazine was a man named Lowell Thomas, who went on the air and told of the plight of the magazine and of the lost subscriber database. Letters poured in from subscribers and new orders as well, doubling the circulation. Well, you know, that sounds great, but what happened was that all occurred so quickly that they weren't quite ready and couldn't meet the demand or pay the expenses that had accumulated with the purchase of the new building and the equipment.
Yeah, and by the summer of 1948, 2 years later, the magazine was $32,000 in debt. Back then, $32,000 was considerable debt. I guess it, in some respects, it's considerable these days as well. Their printer refused to print another press run, and publication essentially stopped. Lynn's father knew an elderly, wealthy Jewish woman, Tessie Derlach, who might be able to help. When Lynn, his father, and the publisher called on her at her elegant Park Avenue apartment, the first thing she said was, "We must affirm that the divine ideas and direction we seek will manifest." Next, she continued, "We must wait, knowing the guidance will come. When we hear something or intuit something, we must write it down, no matter how strange or irrelevant it may seem." You know, it seems more like an enlightened thought than wishful thinking, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even back in 1948.
Well, the group, they thought this sounded kind of weird. They thought it was strange, but they agreed to do a session doing exactly what Tessie had laid out. So they spent 45 minutes. They all sat together in silence, and they jotted things down as ideas came into their head. And after 45 minutes of silence, Tessie asked them to share with the group the kind of things they'd written down. Well, there was a lot of silence. Of course, people were a little embarrassed. And Len was the first one to speak, and he apologized to the group and read his first entry, which was, "I need a haircut." Well, everyone but Tessie was totally dumbfounded. But she shouted out, "That's great! You're priming the pump. Cutting your hair is apropos to our current challenge. Do you know that Buddhist monks cut their hair to show their dedication for sacrificing their vanity and narcissism while they're seeking nirvana?"
How about that?
Well, of course, the group winced a little bit and were kind of dumbfounded, but Tessie didn't care at all. She just said, "Next, who's got another idea?"
After the rest of the group added their input, Tessie rose to her feet and said, "You have a big problem here. You run this business from a lack mentality. All I've heard is what you don't have. You're never going to succeed unless you learn to be more positive. You've got to learn to picture in your minds and declare confidently what you want this magazine to be. And Lynn, I believe your haircut insight means this company needs to cut negativity out of each and every one of your beautiful heads. And to help you see that," she continued, "I'm going to write you a check for $5,000 to get you started. And the rest, as they say, is history. Guidepost is as popular as Unity's Daily Word."
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
What a story that magazine has, Guidepost. And to know that it almost disappeared that far back, if they had not just used that concept or that idea. And it wasn't just one thing, because when you experience this, it affects you for the rest of your life. That you, as you learn things, you keep applying them. And one of the individuals who participated in that board meeting was a man named Norman Vincent Peale. And after he saw the results of what happened in that session, he wrote The Power of Positive Thinking. And I'm sure you've all heard of that book.
Question: how many times have you read Matthew 21:22? It goes, "Ask, believing you have received," and said, "Yeah, right. I've asked, but nothing's happened. I've asked a gazillion times, and I'm not getting anything at all that I've asked for." ASK. As we mentioned before, ask should really be interpreted as declare or claim or affirm. It is not petitioning a God out there for anything.
And we've got some practical examples of that we do every day. We, quote, ask a spigot for water when we reach over and turn it on. We ask a wall outlet for light by flipping the switch. Or sometimes some people actually clap their hands. We may not understand the specifics of how the principles of running water or electricity work, but we know, we believe that they are principles we depend on. We don't go up to the sink or the wall outlet, get on our knees, and beg for water or light. In fact, if we did that, we could beg all day, but if we never turn it on, it wouldn't happen.
What a surprise.
So we simply work the principle. The principle of electricity, the principle of running water. We know and understand the outcome, and that's what we work.
Exactly. In our work, we have long used the phrase as one of our best principles for success. Here it is. Affirm what you want to manifest from the field of infinite potential. Now, this is what we mean by that. Affirming something means speaking as if it's already a done deal, from a consciousness of abundance standpoint rather than from a consciousness of lack perspective. Listen to the words you speak. They'll tell you where your consciousness is or isn't. Are you focused on what you haven't done or don't have? Make the mental shift to affirming what it is that you're really seeking. Say it in positive terms, confidently, and say it with energy and enthusiasm.
And I just want to re-emphasize that, because I think that's so powerful, that your words really do tell you where your consciousness is. And if you listen to yourself, it's incredible what you'll discover about how you're thinking. And sometimes it's kind of a shock that you discover you're a little more negative than you thought, or lack, you're believing in lack consciousness rather than in prosperity. So affirming what you want to manifest transforms your magnetic field. So you actually begin aligning your human self with your higher self. So prosperity and whatever else it is you are working on can manifest through you.
And so here's how it works. Instead of affirming a specific outcome, affirm the essence, capital E essence, of what you want. For example, instead of affirming that you get a raise, for example, affirm that you are financially independent or financially stable, with all your bills paid and plenty to share and spare. Instead of, I no longer suffer from asthma, affirm, I have now transcended all patterns of illness. I am free and healthy and well. Visualize yourself embodying the essence of what it is you're affirming. Knowing comes from deep within, where you know that you know that you know. It's the knowing that allows you to simply turn the faucet to get the water, or putting your hand under a touchless faucet to hit a switch, knowing you'll get light, or simply clapping to get the light, as we've mentioned before. Imagine if we had that same kind of belief and trust and confidence about our ability to manifest.
And so you see in what Bill just described, you see the acronym of ASK: affirm, see, and know. Those are the three elements that come into play. You know, there's a classic story I feel just this urge to share right now. This classical clinical story, it came from our clinical psychology days, courses. We didn't actually do much with clinical psych other than take the classes that were required. But there was this great story that was a classic in that class. And it's about a young man who suddenly believes he's dead, a walking corpse. Now, his parents were just exasperated. They struggled. They tried to get him to see that he was alive. And they finally arranged an appointment with a highly respected New York City psychiatrist. Well, the psychiatrist also tried his professional best. He pulled out all the stops to convince this young man that he was not a corpse and that he was certainly not dead. And they fruitlessly argued back and forth until finally the psychiatrist had an idea. He was certain this idea would convince the young man that his belief was erroneous. So what he did is he looked at the young man and said, "Tell me this, do you think dead people bleed?" The young man thought for a minute and then he said, "No, all body functions stop when you're dead, so there'd be no blood flowing." The psychiatrist then took a needle from his desk and pricked the young man's finger. The young man gasped and stared at his finger in amazement as the blood oozed out from where that doctor had pricked him. "Wow," the young man said finally. "Look at that. Dead people do bleed."
Gee.
His confirmation bias was so powerful. This is the power of knowing. We want to make sure that what we know is truth. Because his confirmation bias was so powerful that highly credible evidence was discounted entirely.
Oh, wow. Good story. So, not suffering from a pain in the ask really means doing something that doesn't cause pain in the first place. Doesn't that make sense? Declare what you want to manifest by right of consciousness. Get over the seeing it is believing it mentality. Believing it is seeing it is the way to go. Affirming it is seeing it. Declaring it is seeing it. Claiming it is seeing it.
And with all of those in practice, we know. And we don't just know it at an intellectual level. We know that we know that we know from the depths of our being. And so we know that we know that we know you are incredible, you're extraordinary, you are divine, and we just affirm that you do not suffer from a pain in the ask as you walk the spiritual path on practical feet. Blessings.